The final edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for audiences who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Hi, I'm Tony Hendra, and this is the final edition Radio Hour. We have a marvelously violent show for you this week in honor of the marvelously violent world around us. You'll hear a lot of gunfire in the next hour because it's our Second Amendment right to fire off as many shots from as many weapons in as many directions as we possibly can without worrying who they hit and how seriously. Let's hear them for our glorious leader Wayne LaPierre and our fellow NRA zombies who have managed to change the Second Amendment from a restricted right to bear arms in certain circumstances for certain reasons to the right to kill other humans if we feel like it. And like Joe the Dumber Wurzelbacher, we like that. Yeah, stand your ground, Elliot, Oliver, Robertson, Roger. As law-abiding gun owners, we know there is no such thing as a law-abiding gun owner when there are no laws to abide by. And forget getting weapons out of the hands of the mentally challenged. Anyone, like us, who feels the need to keep a fully loaded AK-47 under his bed is mentally challenged. And it's not just guns that made a lot of noise this week. Nationalism, which has historically killed more humans than even the Bible and its little brother, Kid Koran, made a big comeback. Muslim-hating, ultranationalist mass murderer Narendra Modi was elected leader of the world's largest democracy, India. How do you like them apples, Mahatma Gandhi? And in Europe, which has had the good sense to move beyond nationalism, the same nationalist lunatics who gave us World Wars I and II swept to victory in European elections. Yay! Springtime for bigots and genocide! So hang on to your replica Nazi helmets, lock and load, and away we go with the final edition Radio Hour. The final edition is pleased to present this special message.
Hi, I'm a typical suburban dad.
And I'm his typical suburban wife.
Hey, honey, do you hear the winds of change blowing?
Sure do, honey. Why don't you tell them what's happening to the nuclear family?
Yes, dear. The average nuclear family now consists of two children, a pet, and a semi-automatic weapon.
Our family is better than average. We have three children and two semi-automatic weapons.
Oh, honey, you know we have two children now.
Oh, that's right, dear. One of them shot the other one.
We call it family fire.
It's what happens when you leave your guns out. It's our Second Amendment right.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the state, the right of the people to leave their guns out shall not be infringed.
You'll have to pry our kids' guns from their cold, dead fingers.
Which we've done.
You know, honey, losing a child is a small price to pay for keeping and bearing arms.
You said it, dear. After all, we can always get more kids.
Guess we're gonna have to start right now.
Fortunately, there's a brand new organization for parents who leave their guns out where their kids can get them.
The PTNRA.
The Parent Teacher National Rifle Association.
The PTNRA makes sure no law will ever come between your child and your gun.
Thank God. Hey, Junior, what you got there? isn't that cute, honey? Honey? Honey?
The PTNRA. Because guns don't kill, very small people whose parents have guns do.
Good morning and welcome to California Sunday. I'm your host, Gary Middleton. This morning we're talking with David Gold, who's running for Congress as an independent candidate in the 11th District. Mr. Gold, thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
Mr. Gold, you come from an interesting background for a congressional candidate. You are a comedy writer.
Yes, I am, Gary.
So why would a comedy writer decide to go into politics? That strikes me as a bit unusual, to tell you the truth.
I don't think that's unusual at all, Gary. Just like anyone else, I'm a citizen. I am concerned about the future of this state and this country, and I feel I can be of service to the people of the 11th District. Plus, just try to find a comedy writing job the way things are now.
Well, then let me just start off by asking you, do you think there's any chance of comprehensive immigration reform being passed this year?
Funny you should mention that. I just saw in the news. Did you see this? President Obama says he's going to give John Boehner until the end of the summer to vote on it.
Yes, I did see that.
And in response, Boehner promised he would vote on the immigration bill right after locusts fly out of his ass.
Excuse me, Mr. Gold, but I don't remember Speaker Boehner actually saying that.
It's not a direct quote, Gary. Come on. I'm sure whatever Boehner actually said was not nearly that funny.
Mr. Gold, with all due respect, I don't think you can say the Speaker of the House talked about locusts flying out of his rear end unless he really said it.
Well, I'm sure Boehner says worse things when he's drunk than anything I could make up. The guy looks like an ad for a liver transplant.
Mr. Gold, frankly, I think you've just badly hurt your chances of being elected. Why would a candidate for Congress want to make a joke about John Boehner drinking too much?
Well, Gary, to be perfectly honest with you, I can't come up with any new angles on how his face is orange.
Okay, then. Let me ask you about gun control. Do you think there's any chance Congress could pass a law regulating firearms next year?
Gary, I think we need to stop mentally ill people from getting guns. Of course, if we did that, Los Angeles would have no police department.
Okay, Mr. Gold, you just suggested that the LAPD is completely made up of psychopaths.
Gary, I would never say what you just said.
Because it's not true?
Because it's not funny.
Mr. Gold, when you say these things, aren't you concerned that the voters will think you don't have what it takes to be in the United States Congress?
Gary, if I'm elected, I'm going to completely screw up.
So why are you even bothering to run?
Because I'm the only candidate in this race with a plan for the future.
Do you think it was a good idea to say that?
Yes, the crew laughed at that one.
Okay, let me ask you about Hillary Clinton. Do you think this country's ready for a female president?
Yes, I think this country can handle a president who wears a lipstick, a dress, and high heels.
Well, it's never happened before.
What about Woodrow Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Gold. We have about a minute left if you want to share with our viewers your mission statement, your vision, or whatever closing remarks you'd like to make to the people of California's 11th District.
Yeah. Hey, folks, check out my website, davegoldfunny.com, and can also see my resume and read my writing samples.
Is that it?
No, wait a minute. I'm also on LinkedIn.
The final edition salutes another Facebook hero.
Ray Suggins finds political editorials that his friends already agree with and posts them for all his friends to read and agree with. And in that way, he strikes a blow for states' rights. Or abortion rights. Or maybe he's still campaigning for Mitt Romney. You know what? I forget what his deal is.
Coming this fall from all three networks, it's Coppophilia, yet another searing drama about Americans' crazy, doomed, but unending love affair with cops. James Franco stars as Officer Lou Stiggy Stiglitz, yet another bipolar, sociopathic, trigger-happy, but always endearing cop who strews bullet-riddled corpses, ruined lives, and routine injustices in his wake the way a snake sheds skins, and always comes out smelling like an endearingly battered, week-old rose.
Hey, officer, how can I have a career in law enforcement?
Get your hands on the car, you fucking dirtbag. What you got in your pocket? A fucking gun? He's got a fucking gun!
No, no, you put it there! Ah, mommy! Mommy!
Good job, Stiggy. Keep these numbers up, you'll make lieutenant.
Like you say, Captain, forget the law. It's all about enforcement.
Coppophilia, the series that brings you the heartwarming inside story of the brave men and occasional deluded female who 24/7, 365 are ready and willing to put their lives on the line for one another.
I saw you plant that gun on the kid, Stiggy. I'm going to IA.
Tell you how it works, Cadet Cody. One of us kills a perp, sugar. We all kill the motherfucker. Ever hear about the one rotten apple in the barrel?
Yeah, and you're it.
That ain't the way it is, sweetie. One good apple in the barrel spoils it for the rest of us apples. One good apple in the barrel is a fucking rat.
Jesus, you just shot her in cold blood.
Uh-uh, motherfucker. You did.
Coppophilia, the show that brings you the enduring truth that any police force in any society embodies the darkest, cruelest, and stupidest prejudices that society harbors and whitewashes them so clean, you love those boys and babes in blue.
Excuse me, officer. Can you tell me the way to the Statue of Liberty?
I'm eating. Go fuck yourself.
You know, you people are the same everywhere. Back home, we call you lot the filth.
Get your fucking hands in the car, you limey faggot. What do you got in your pocket?
Probably the gun you're about to put there. Bobby!
Copophilia, yet another exciting, engrossing telenarcotic series from yet another Craven network that brings you yet another flawed but lovable version of your own collective lizard brain. Cops, you gotta love them on Copophilia.
Welcome to the U.S. Government Excuse phone mail system. Please type in a code for any recent problem so that we can explain why the U.S. government cannot do anything about it. You have chosen mass shootings. This problem results from multiple causes. Here is each one in turn, and why it is pointless even to complain. Mental health. Many people with mental health problems cannot get help, or will not get help, because they think they are sane, just like you think you are. To fix this, Congress would have to perform a series of nonpartisan studies, accept recommendations from a blue ribbon panel, turn those recommendations into legislation without inserting partisan doctrine, and allocate real money for a new social program. This will not happen because House Republicans are as useless as a yoga mat at a chili cook-off. Gun reform. Guns are widely available that fire more bullets more rapidly than ever, ensuring a larger body count when shootings occur. But we cannot restrict or even track this because the NRA is a cult and has made Congress as useless as a Chase Manhattan bank that opens right across the street from another Chase Manhattan bank. Media panic. Whenever someone shoots a lot of people, the media, and by extension the public, amplify the killer's puerile videos and monotonous writings, turning mass murder into an obvious path to celebrity and influence. This is a bad idea. You know it. I know it. The media knows it. Yet coverage plays out this way each time as if a robot were in charge. This is because the media, and by extension the public, are about as useless as a condom at Comic-Con.
This has been the U.S. government phone mail excuse system. If you have a suggestion for running the government, leave a message after the beep. You will not be recorded. It's just a beep.
The final edition salutes another Facebook hero.
When Michelle Drabble forwards a link from Upworthy, she could just say what the damn link is about. She could say, "Oh, it's just a cat playing with an owl." Then we could decide for ourselves whether we want to bother watching it. But she wants us to be inspired. No, more than that. She is forcing us to be inspired. What's the matter? Don't you want to be inspired? What is wrong with you?
Hi, I'm Stone Peck for the final edition. As part of our series, America, Show Us Your Guns, I'm traveling to the Midwest to experience how responsible gun owners actually use the weapons they're so passionate about. Today, I'm in Michigan's Upper Peninsula with local hunter Dickie Duncan. And we're after some bobtail deer. Dickie, why deer?
'Cause the place is overrun with them suckers. They need a cull, and I'm the guy to cull them.
What weapon from your extensive collection are you using today?
This here is a so-called assault weapon, an AK-47 with a 50-round mag.
That's a lot of gun.
This is the minimum firepower you need in the lopsided battle between man and beast. Hunters need assault weapons to bring down the tougher, faster, cannier, more evolved, and elusive deer of today.
There's a fine-looking buck over there, Dickie. That's got to be a three-pointer. Check out that rack.
Where? Where?
In that clearing, dead ahead, about 15 yards away.
Right. I thought that was a bush. Shit. I'm out of shells. How did I do?
You missed completely. You winged an oak, though.
The odds are always against the hunter. I need a bigger mag. This here's a 100-round mag.
He's still there in the clearing. In fact, he hasn't moved.
Aw, shit. He's walking away. And I'm out of shells again.
Well, you shot the ground up pretty good. Wow, that's wild asparagus. That's really rare. Dickie, you shot some wild asparagus for dinner.
I'm on a caveman diet. No vegetables. What you non-hunters don't realize is these animals are a cunning and formidable adversary. I need more firepower.
What's this now?
This here's a multiple grenade launcher. Lays down a 50-yard diameter kill zone. Nothing can stay alive in it. Whoa! Check out that groundhog!
What if it's Puck's Tawny Pete?
We're in Michigan. Did I bag the groundhog?
He'll spend the rest of his life in a wheelchair.
Yay! Fucking A!
And you've started a forest fire.
See, this is why you can't put controls on our hunting arsenals. We got a Second Amendment right to whatever weapon gets the job done. Tell that to your tree-hugging listeners.
You just did, Dickie. From the Michigan killing fields, I'm Stone Peck for the final edition.
Hey there, folks. Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Is the IRS hounding you for unpaid taxes?
Have you recently been injured? Are you addicted to drugs or alcohol?
Are you bothered by pet odors, hearing loss, bathtub mildew, or occasional incontinence?
We can help. We're conservative deniers, and we're in denial.
We're heavily into denial. We make denial work for us, and now we want to make it work for you, too.
You may have seen our denial at work in our solution to climate change. More extreme weather and rising sea levels will cost trillions of dollars and countless lives.
But with denial, no, it won't.
That's right. It's just not happening. Oh, and you're welcome.
Let's talk to some folks who have used our denial services in their own lives.
This is Roger. He came to us with all the telltale signs of an impending stroke.
We told him it wasn't happening. And guess what? It didn't. Right, Roger?
Great! Now meet Jeanette. When she first came to us, she was running around like her hair was on fire. What was the problem, Jeanette?
My hair was on fire.
So we applied the same sarcasm that we use on scientists who warn about climate change.
Oh, Henny Penny, the sky is falling right on my burning head.
Problem solved, right, Penny? How are the skin grafts coming?
Very pink. What skin graft?
That's our girl. If you have a problem you'd like denied, come see us at Conservative Deniers.
Our experts will examine your problem and completely fail to see it. And just like Jeanette and Roger, you'll be saying,
thank you, Conservative Deniers.
Conservative denial should not be used by women who are pregnant. But then, you're not pregnant at all.
And now, a special report from the Final Edition Radio Hour that may change your life. Or it may not.
Hello, I'm Sally Gibson. The Civil War reenactor has been a popular punchline for many jokes. But what you might not know is the hobby of Civil War reenacting is dying. I had the chance to speak with one of the last of the pretend generation, a veteran of the Civil War reenactment.
Hurrah for the choice of our nation, our chieftain so brave and so true. We'll go for the Great Reformation, for Lincoln and liberty too.
My name is First Sergeant Martin Taylor, 53rd New York, Company H, 3rd Corps, Army of the Potomac.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff.
How would you know? Were you there?
Excuse me?
You don't know what it's like. You've never seen your numbers disappear because new recruits don't want to sign up, because World of Warcraft and Twitter are way cooler. World of Warcraft!
Is it true that movies have influenced the hobby as well?
You some kind of expert? Have you seen the elephant?
I don't know what that means.
You've never seen 10,000 Strong because it's the anniversary of a major battle, and no one has family obligations or business trips. To have 10,000 Strong because everyone saw Glory and the Ken Burns documentary and got excited.
Now, the closest thing to a cool Civil War movie is the romantic drama Cold Mountain.
Don't open those wounds. I can't take it. I've gone from making fun of other soldiers for wearing the wrong eyeglasses and not having the appropriate handmade stitches to saying, "Come on out. Yeah, you can bring pizza." Pizza! It's not even close to accurate food.
Oh, what about Lincoln? That must have generated some interest.
Were you there? Were you there at the Civil War reenactment in Hamilton, New Jersey, where we had 17 Union, 4 Confederate, and 27 Lincolns, all pointing at each other and yelling, "Now! Now! Now!" I slept next to an ice cream truck. I will never unsee that night or unhear that song.
What do you do now?
Try to forget. Try to remember. I forage. I march. I bivouac where I can.
Hey, buddy. You can't camp here in Central Park.
Oh, do you have a pass, sir?
Yeah, buddy. Get this tent out of here.
You are considered trespass, sir. I will have to fire upon you, sir.
You can't have black powder here in New York City, buddy.
If I had my regiment, we would take you to prisoner quarters.
Okay, pal. I'm going to give you 10 minutes to load that thing, then I'm going to give you a ticket.
I only need 3 minutes. Huzzah!
So, First Sergeant Martin Taylor marches on, down Fifth Avenue before he gets a ticket and his wife finds out. She thinks he's pretty weird for doing this anyway, even though she posts pictures of her lunches on Facebook so much that she's been defriended by most of her high school classmates and a distant cousin. Sergeant Taylor marches on to find one last decently attended reenactment, or a White Castle when he gets hungry.
My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the faithful lightning of his terrible split sword. His truth is marching on. Glory.
Hello, everyone. It's time for another Talk with Tony. Hey, forget about it. Talking with Tony. Hey. This week, we're going to discuss anniversaries of books with Tony Hendra. As it happens, this week was the 5th anniversary of the publication of my only book, Get Rich Cheating, which is just fantastic and you should spend lots of money on. Or if you don't like books and you want to burn your books, just keep buying my book and you can keep burning it. But even more impressive, it's the 10th anniversary of the publication of Tony's book, Father Joe, which, as you may know, is a great success internationally. It's been translated into 15 languages. It's a story about his lifelong friendship with a Benedictine monk, because as we all know, all good comedy comes from monks. It obviously affected Tony, and it affected his career and the final edition, and it began as a story at the Moth, and that story is what we are about to hear. Enjoy this Talk with Tony! Ah, forget about it!
I was raised a Catholic, and later I became a satirist. And I've always felt that Catholics had a rather unfair advantage in the satire game in that they spent their formative years with men in skirts. But I had an even more unfair advantage in that I was once a man in a skirt myself, specifically a Benedictine monk. It all started when I was 14. I was having a torrid love affair with a woman twice my age, a Catholic married woman. And I'd actually gotten to second base with this woman, so I was madly in love. Of course, I didn't know it was second base because I was growing up in England. Well, this was not at all good for the marriage in question. And after a lot of weeping and praying and kneeling and holding hands, it was decided for some reason that the husband and I should go to a monastery known to this couple and there consult with the Holy Fathers. Go figure. We used to burn people at the stake, now we bond and reconcile. Anyway, after a very awkward journey of 4 hours with this guy, we ended up in the Isle of Wight in the south of England at a monastery called Core Abbey. Core Abbey was idyllic. It was a 1,000-acre farm by the sea with great oak forests that came down to the beach. But what changed my life about Core Abbey was not the place itself, but the priest we'd come to see, Dom Joseph Warrilow. Father Joe, as he was known, was absolutely hilarious. He wore old granny glasses from World War I when he'd been a boy, and he had a big, thick, triangular nose like a groundhog, and he walked like a duck with his big flat feet and his black sandals flapping and poking out of his skirts. He was just about as close as you could get to a cartoon monk, except that he was also a saint. Peace and joy and serenity and simplicity came off this guy like aftershave. And for so profoundly innocent a person, he was immensely knowledgeable about human relationships, and he soon put all our angst to rest. For Father Joe, the only thing that mattered was love. If you could find some love in a situation, however tangled it was, you could untangle it. And I didn't realize too much later how neatly he defused our little love triangle by making me fall in love with him. Now, I'd never come across a priest like this. To me, the church was a bunch of crusty, tipsy, money-grubbing, mostly Irish men who were always telling me to keep my hands out of my pockets or I'd go to hell. Pocket billiards is a mortal sin, Hendra. Well, it is. But Father Joe taught me that the church, although it was all that, was something else. It was a haven, a place for healing, a keeper of the light in the darkest of times, which these indeed were. And one thing really expressed that more than anything, which was the music these monks sang. 7 times a day, 365 days a year, it was called Gregorian chant. An extraordinary, amazing music. Very, very ancient, pre-Christian. Probably went back to Egypt or Mesopotamia. And yet, it had, what made it soar was that it had an intense, here and now, belief in the Bible's message of redemption. Well, that was it. I spent the last 3 years of my school career studying for monkhood. In fact, you could say I was a teenage monk. Other guys had posters of Elvis or Chubby Checker or Chuck Berry on their bedrooms. My musical idol was St. Gregory. They agonized about whether to get a mod or a rocker haircut. I couldn't wait to shave a big bald spot in my hair. And as soon as school was over, in I went. It was everything that I possibly hoped for and more. Outside the monastery walls, the Cold War was at its most lunatic. Former colonies were bursting into bloody revolution. It was a terrible time. But Father Warrilow, Father Joe, taught me a certain detachment from these things. Not escapism at all, on the contrary, great, great concern for all concerned on all sides. But a placing of all this in the context of eternity. For as he said, the Bible says, all this will pass. All things in the world will pass someday like grass before the wind. Like grass before the wind. Well, all those were the 4 or 5 most serene months of my life. They too passed like grass before the wind because I was living a lie. When I'd been at school, I had unfortunately won a scholarship to Cambridge University. And I had admitted to tell the good fathers this. When they found out, they insisted that I go, take the degree, and then if I wanted to become a monk, they would welcome me with open arms. So I went to Cambridge and behaved like a pretty good little monk for a year or so. And then one night, on a whim, I went to the theater to catch a satirical review called Beyond the Fringe. Now, Beyond the Fringe was a seminal show, a landmark show. It was probably the first time in modern British history that satire had really socked it to the sacred goods of the nation. to the Church of England, to the Royal Family, to Shakespeare, the BBC, the class system, even World War II. I could not believe that these things could be said in public, or that they could be so funny. I went into that theater a monk, and I came out a satirist. And in that moment, I entered what we know as the real world, a world of laughter and money and travel and some success and excitement and applause. And I've regretted it ever since. For the next 30-odd years, I never really stopped being a monk. And my little brushes with celebrity when they came never came to much, perhaps because deep down I still believed that celebrity, too, would pass like grass before the wind. Something else happened in those 30 years. The Catholic Church essentially self-destructed. In the name of reform, it committed suicide, theologically, liturgically, and worst of all, musically. That glorious music, all 1,500 years of it, was thrown out like a ball of old manuscript. And in its place came a slew of banal, well-meaning songs written by banal, well-meaning non-entities whose musical gods were Melanie and John Denver. Through it all, Father Joe just became older and more saintly, completely unfazed by all these assaults on his faith and his order and his religion and his music. I used to think of him as a little lighthouse of faith blinking away across the Atlantic. And about 10 years ago, we celebrated the 60th anniversary of his monastic vows. And it struck me at the time that this guy had lived through all the horrors of that horrible century. World War I, the Great Depression, World War II, the Cold War, Vietnam, Cambodia, all the hideous genocides visited on the world by the Kremlin and the Pentagon and Whitehall and Beijing. And he was completely unmarked spiritually by all of it. And this came home to me in a very odd way, because for some reason that I can no longer recall, in the midst of all this celebration, I taught him the words of an old World War II song that my father had once taught me many years before. And he was 80 by now, but he absolutely loved this song, which was completely new to him, even though it was 45 years after the end of World War II. And he marched up and down the cloister with his big old sandals flapping, bellowing this at the top of his lungs. You may know it. It goes like this. Hitler has only got one ball. Goering has two but very small. Himmler is somewhat similar. And poor old Goebbels got no balls at all. Two years ago, he became very sick. And fearing the worst, I went to see him, and I took along my little son, Sebastian, 6 years old, because I knew that he adored children and it might help. And I wanted Sebastian to be able to say someday that he'd once kissed a saint. And the look in that old man's eyes when Sebastian did just that was like a window into heaven. He died 3 weeks later, and I wept for days. And I'm old enough to have lost many dear friends, but this was unlike any other, because with him went my last connection to the real world, the world seen in the context of eternity, to the few final things that I actually held sacred that were beyond the reach of satire. And because satire and the sacred have a deep symbiosis, it's even possible that the satire died with him too. Not, however, the irony. Irony never dies. The day after he died, I went into a Catholic church here in New York, one of those big old Gothic barns up on the upper West Side. And there in front of me on the pew was one of these new modern hymnals. And I opened it completely at random and read these words. Hail Queen, Mother of Mercy, our sweet life and hope, all hail. We cry out to you for grace. Please don't turn away your face, lest we should in our journey fail. Awful. Ghastly. Melanie has a lot to answer for. And I thought back across the years to that faraway boy standing in a candlelit church, surrounded by the men of peace he so wanted to be one of, while we sang the exquisite Latin words that this wretched doggerel was trying to approximate. It's called the Salve Regina, Hail to the Queen. And it's one of the oldest hymns in the Catholic Church. And, ironically, it was Father Joe's favorite. The Salve is a kind of half-lullaby, half-love ballad, which has been sung at bedtime in the last office of the day by countless good men and women down through the centuries. And since you're never likely to hear it in the church again, I'd like to try and sing it for you here tonight. So this is for the moth and for Joe. And given these surroundings, it might be a first. Salve Regina, Mater Misericordiae, Vita Dulcedo, et Spes Nostra Salve. A te clamamus, exules filii Eve, a te suspiramus, gementes et flentes, in hac lacrimarum valle. O clemens, O pia, O dulcis Virgo Maria. Thank you.
And now, great moments in Chipotle gun control history. Dateline, Dallas, Texas, May 3rd, 2013.
Hey, you gun guys, get those assault weapons out of my Chipotle.
No way. We want the Chipotle sauce.
Oh, shit. Give them all the Chipotle sauce.
January 3rd, 2014.
Hey, you gun guys, get those assault weapons out of my Chipotle.
No way. We want the Chipotle sauce.
I'll get a petition signed.
We have rights. Open carry rights.
Even in a private establishment?
Open carry.
Oh, shit. Get them all Chipotle sauce. Petition.
May 19th, 2014.
Hey, you gun guys. Get those assault weapons out of my Chipotle.
Chipotle sauce.
We got a petition from a bunch of moms.
Then we'll go to Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. Wait, why was that acceptable in the first place? Were Gatling guns welcome in local taverns?
And this has been Great Moments in Chipotle Gun Control History.
The final edition salutes another Facebook hero.
When more than 200 young girls were abducted from a boarding school in Nigeria, Laura Fenning knew just what to do. She posted a statement on Facebook condemning this egregious act. And more than 63 people clicked like. What do you say to that, kidnappers? Game, set, match. She also posted a petition to stop Thorin from dying in the next Hobbit movie.
Welcome to Sea Harmony, the only dating service for corporate people. If you're a corporate person, as defined by Citizens United, you can look forward to romantic encounters like this one.
Hey, baby, I'm Comcast.
Hey, stud, I'm Time Warner Cable.
What's a nice corporation like you doing in an unregulated economy like this?
Oh, I bet you say that to all the obscenely profitable media players.
Just Netflix. Anyway, what do you do in the rest of my fiscal life?
Oh, nothing. Just the usual. Disappointing my customers.
Ooh, when it comes to disappointing customers, I'm pretty big.
Really? How big are you?
I don't mean to brag, baby, but my customer satisfaction is the lowest in the cable industry.
Would you like to bundle my channels?
More than that, I'd like to acquire your stock.
But what about the Justice Department and the FCC?
They can watch.
You're so bad.
I didn't get to be the company that will dictate what 40% of Americans see by being good.
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't need sense, sugar. I have $45 billion.
Oh, now you're speaking my language.
It's all for you, baby. All for you.
Oh, you're fundamentally changing my structure.
Let's limit competition.
Yes! Yes!
Oh, merge, baby. Merge.
Oh, yes!
Yes,
merge me.
See Harmony. Dating for corporate people. On your own, you're just one uncontrollable corporate entity. Together, you can be a colossus, the likes of which haven't been seen since 1984, when the government broke up AT&T.
Yes!
See Harmony puts startups and smaller companies without deep pockets at a competitive disadvantage. Void where prohibited by law. If you find out where that is, please tell us.
In our search through the archives, the final edition ran across an old recording from one of the forgotten folk singers from the 1960s, Ramblin' Johnny Kafka. Here is a recording from 1967 in Berkeley, California, expressing an unpopular opinion about the Vietnam War. He was for it.
Johnny got his pistol and he went to Vietnam. He only had his high school ring and pictures of his mom. He came home 2 years later with 10 G's and GI pay. So despite your pinko book reports, the war is A-OK.
Hey man, your song is a bummer.
We should listen to our leaders. We should listen to our friends. If he sends us to Thailand, we should all do what he says. If you want to slam a leader who's more well-informed than you, you should shut your ugly pie hole, you perverted commie Jew.
You know that love, man. Love.
With industry and agriculture stalled by recent war, Vietnam has resources that we should be dying for, like a bamboo rubber compound for a strong synthetic rope, or a great beeline deposit that we use in making soap. Saigon is just 2,000 miles away from Honolulu. If we'd gone this song with Africa, we'd all be speaking Zulu. If you think you'd run a better war, I'd like to see you try. You stink, you evil Bolsheviki, faggy-wristed spy.
El segundo, come quick. There's a man outside. He wants to fight you.
All right. Probably another damn liberal looking to make his mark.
No, boss. This guy is different. He says he knows you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He says he was first, then you came second. He says that's why they call you El Segundo. He says his name is Firsty.
I hear you're looking for me.
You second?
Yeah. Seems so.
Second Amendment?
Yeah.
Well, I'm first. First Amendment. We need to speak.
Well, I'm a man of action, not words.
So they say. They also say you got a not-so-well-regulated militia to do your action for you.
Yep. Everyone, pack and eat.
Well, I've assembled some folks, too. Video games, movies, reality TV, and we're tired of taking blame for all the trouble you've been causing.
Yeah, what trouble's that?
Death, mayhem, massacre, gunfights at the schoolhouse, gunfights at the playhouse, gunfights at the whorehouse.
Well, that wasn't us started that trouble. I heard it was you, Firsty, inspiring every one of my boys with your violent imagery.
We were just trying to entertain. You gave them the automatic weapons to act out their nonsense, and now we got a lot of dead folks.
Not my concern. It's your fault.
No, sir. It's your fault.
It's on you, so shut up.
I will not shut up. That's my whole thing. I'm pretty sure the people of this town can't survive without talking.
And I'm pretty sure they can't survive without guns.
If I can't yell fire in a crowded theater, why for can you fire off 1,000 armor-piercing bullets in one?
Maybe you should have got yourself a better lobby, Firsty.
That ain't how it's supposed to work, Second. That ain't right.
Actually, it is right. It's my Second Amendment right.
This town ain't big enough for the both of us.
I was wondering when you'd finally say that.
Draw!
And who the hell are you?
I'm Six!
The Sixth Amendment? Ensuring a fair and speedy trial?
No! The Sixth Commandment! Thou shalt not kill!
The Final Edition Radio Hour is performed at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hendra, Jeff Hendrick, Kevin Janis, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. The Final Edition Radio Hour is written, at one time or another, by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hendra, Jeff Hendrick, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition Radio Hour is produced by Tony Hendra and Jeff Chrysler, West Coast producer Barry Lank. The Final Edition Radio Hour is edited and audio produced by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2014.